Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to another exciting edition of Blog Talk Radio, Marketing Pulp International, New York edition with yours truly, Dennis. Shipment is 10:30 a.m., 10/28/2019. 61 degrees and cloudy here in Brooklyn, New York, and I'm glad to be with you. Hope you're glad to be with me as well. Those that want to join the conversation, give us a call at 215-383-3872. Again, that number is 215-383-3872. Had a quiet weekend. Spent a lot of time watching some football, a little baseball. I'm not really into the World Series, but it looks like the Nats aren't doing very well. They came out of the house it started out like a house on fire, let me put it that way, and subsequently lost two straight to the Astros, so we don't know quite where this is heading, but for Washington's sake, we hope they do manage to eke out a victory. Things have gotten worse and worse and worse for Chump, the brain-dead comic. Connor Bark came out of Game 5 and was roundly booed to the refrain, quote, end quote, lock him up. That's something that his crowd often said to his detractors and those that he routinely scorns. So I think the tide is turning on the guy. I really do. I don't think that he can survive. I'm not underestimating him, however. Nevertheless, it looks bad. You know, you have all these State Department officials whom are basically ignoring Pompeo's directives not to testify. I can't stop these people from testifying, man. If they have a lawful subpoena from the Congress, that's not even a conflict. You know, you got to do what Congress is saying, you know, not what your, you know, illegitimate government is trying to tell you. And I mean, I understand that the difficulty in which this places a lot of people, you know, because you're torn between following your voice. You know, everyone needs a job, or put it this way, income stream at least anyway. But if you have a lawful subpoena, man, that should give you enough shade to go on and testify to what you know is a corrupt administration. And I can't understand these guys. But, you know, I've always said on this show, and, you know, anecdotally, biographically, you know, I don't have any empirical data to support my conclusion. Nevertheless, it's been my personal experience, and preface it that way, that we're dealing with hypocrites. You know, don't do as I do as I tell you to. And when you're dealing with people like that, you know, it's very, very, very difficult to act ethically, unless you just separate yourself from the situation by, one, either resigning, or two, complying with a lawful order. In this case, they have a lawful order from the Congress, which has oversight authority under Article 1 in the United States Constitution to drag these people in. And the fact that Pompeo and the Attorney General are acting lawlessly, you know, like privileged white males that they are, is, you know, and Trump is not going to, you know, in the end, all these people are going to be held accountable. Look at Sean Spicer, you know, he's acting like a minstrel on Dancing with the Stars. The guy doesn't have two steps in him. And they had him up there looking like a buffoon just to pay his mortgage. And, you know, this is what happens. You know, you want to You want to shed your dignity and any remnant of integrity that you have to support this white nationalist that we have at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Go ahead. You know, Huckabee Sanders, you know, the daughter of former governor, I don't know what happened to him. He used to be somebody I respected as a conservative, but I no longer respect him either. You know, she managed, Sarah Huckabee, who briefly held that role, the role of press secretary after Sean Spicer was unceremoniously ousted. The only reason that she was able to land on her feet, figuratively speaking, is because of her father. It's that simple. Because she's a very unattractive woman. She's not accomplished except as a liar. And she typically would not be someone that the network would, you know, recruit for. That's for a high-profile role. But her father, you know, called in a couple of chips. And this is what happens when you're connected like that. The flip side of that, you know, from a business perspective is, you know, I was talking to, or exchanging posts rather with some persons on social media in a couple of groups that deal primarily with business and specifically with black business, black entrepreneurs. And I learned over the weekend that Trump's brother, I know he had a brother. I didn't know his brother was in business. I know his sister resigned. I know his sister resigned from the federal bench. I think she was, I don't know if she was on the Second Circuit, or, you know, but it was pretty high profile. She was certainly not a district court judge. She resigned because of the tax expose that was done in the New York Times some months ago. But so I know he had a brother, but I thought his brother was older and retired or whatever. Apparently, he still has a business, however, and was able to secure, now get this, a $33 million no-bid contract from the federal government. What is wrong with that picture? So, you know, my response on social media was that, well, this is the game that they're playing, and this is why we need affirmative action, because we're not playing on a level playing field. And it is who you know to be able to access those contracts, SBA and that sort of thing. You get in there and you put your name on all the lists and you dot all your I's and you cross all your T's and hope that you get called after doing all that and aggressively marketing and this and that. And then they have all these people, you know, they used to have an agency which was part of Department of Commerce, Minority Business Development Agency. I don't know if it's still in existence, and dealt with them over there as well. A lot of Negroes sitting up collecting six-figure salaries to do basically nothing, you know. And you see evidence of that here, you know, at the local SBA office. You know, a lot of Negroes sitting in there collecting, you know, high five, low six-figure salaries to basically give you literature that you can literally pull down offline. It's outrageous. You know, it's really a shame. It really is. I mean, if they're only going to be a point of referral to refer you to other resources, then they need not exist. And I believe that one of the agencies that was slated to be eliminated under this administration, not that I agree with anything they do, was the MBDA, Minority Business Development Agency, because they literally do nothing. I don't know what they do. You know, I've reached out to them, and all they do is either refer you to the SBA or tell you, give you gratuitous advice. And, you know, I have a little tolerance for that foolishness. And then they get mad at you, you know, when you reach out. I literally asked one guy, he got annoyed with me. You know, doesn't talk to me anymore, doesn't write me. You know, he moved from one SBA position to a position in local government, basically doing the same thing. So, you know, I didn't get annoyed with him, but I just asked him a question. I guess he, you know, took it, you know, negatively. I don't know how else to express it. But I asked him, what do you guys do? I mean, because, you know, I asked him for some information. He basically was blowing me off, and I was getting really annoyed. And then finally, you know, because he was telling me, well, you got to wait till the lady comes in. I said, but isn't this the SBA office? Why do I have to wait for someone else to come in from another office to counsel me or whatever? You know, I didn't really need counseling at the time. You know, I was just trying to get a piece of information uploaded to my profile so that I could bid on government contracts. Again, a daunting task because, you know, part of the process for bidding on government contracts is that you need to have proven past performance. It's just like a job where you you have the skill set to do the job and the competence or the competencies. However, you have either no or little experience in doing it. I mean, you've been trained to do it. So you've gone through all the formal training and this, that, or the other, or apprenticeship or whatever. And no one will give you an opportunity because you cannot demonstrate with any degree of verification that you have done that type of work before. And it's the same with SBA and, you know, GSA and all these little things where you, you know, contracts. They have little contracts that they, you know, will allow you to bid on, but everybody and their mother is bidding on these contracts. You know, and I frequently go on the dynamic list and look and check and see our position. Apparently I'm on there because all the parasites, you know, all the agencies or companies that can quote unquote help you get a contract can see our listing. So, you know, I guess we're to pay them, you know, upwards of $1,000 for them to get us a $5,000 contract. Yeah, man, it's a scam. The system is definitely rigged. And if you don't know anyone, then it's very difficult for you to access, you know, opportunity. And this is what makes, you know, Trump's brother getting his $33 million contract so disturbing. And all these, they're not even millionaires, they're billionaires. In these cabinet level positions. Don't get it twisted. Ben Carson is a billionaire. He is extremely wealthy. Anytime you have, neurosurgery aside, someone that has his own business or officer, you know, or somebody that just strictly handles his business, that person is wealthy when they can afford to retain someone to just handle their business affairs, you know. So that's where we're at with that, basically. So other than that, you know, watched a couple of games. I guess it was a pass week for the Baltimore Ravens. I cut the cord again. I had briefly, I told you, I'm only temporarily at my, I'm going to turn it into, it'll probably be a summer residence, you know, at my property, you know, on the shore. And for some reason, I wasn't getting any reception, you know, on the antenna built into the facility down there. So I was just checking my phone, making sure I was still on air. I had forgotten that there's a built-in amplifier. So but I remember turning on an amplifier and I wasn't getting anything. So then I decided to rescan the channels after I terminated my service contract with Spectrum. And lo and behold, I got some channels. And it varies. It really does. Sometimes I'll get upwards of 33 channels, and other times I only get three channels. I kid you not, it varies that wildly. And I know what I'm going to have to do eventually, when I start actually developing the property, is I'm going to have to put a 40-foot, 60-foot wood, preferably 100-foot, but I don't know if they're going to allow me to do it because these people have rules for everything down here. And put a 100-foot mast, or as big as I can get it, high as I can get it, up. And that'll give me everything. I'll get all the way down to Hampton Roads, Tidewater area, Virginia, all the way up to probably. I should have no problem getting up to Philadelphia from this area if I have the mast high enough and I have the amplifiers. Even with the run, 100-foot run and the amplifiers, I should be able to get that. But that's in the future. So anyway, the point I was trying to make is, with that sort of run, with the amplifier that I have currently, my reception vacillates wildly. Sometimes, like I said, I get 33 channels. Other times, I only get three. Fortunately, so I don't get the NBC affiliates, but I get CBS and sometime ABC, and then I'll get some of the PBS affiliates from time to time. So, I was able to watch the games in high def, and I was very happy about that. I cannot sit up here and say, "Oh man, I'm not getting anything." But I know I could do better. So as we develop the property, as we move along, I'm definitely going to look into doing that because I had it on my house, me and my lady shared, and it was unbelievable. I mean, the amount of channels that we get, uncompressed, high definition, crystal clear. It's incredible, the technology. Which is what I want to segue into anyway, technology. We were just talking about this online and on another platform I'm on with another guy that's also technologically oriented. So let's take a break, back up, break, just talk about it.
Looking for a hip multimedia management company that can manage you, your service, product, or your next multimedia project? Let East New York Management take you, your service, or your product to the next level. At East New York Management, we can produce and post-produce your project into a sleek finished product. We write scripts, slow-mo, blurbs, and spots that are tight, hot, and bumpy. Liners that flow smoothly with wit as well as with verve. We also manage talent, produce, and post-produce shows that are on the cutting edge, reflecting the undeniable influence of hip-hop on popular culture. The most important thing that we can bring to your product is energy, enthusiasm, and a love for the creative process. Look for us on the World Wide Web at www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Call us at 347-846-8447 or email us at contact@eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Do not waste another minute with whack, boring, and uncreative multimedia and talent management companies. Bring your talent or project to East New York Management. Let East New York Management take you, your service, or your product to the next level.
And we're back here at Marketing Pulpit in Nashville, New York, edition with yours truly, Dennis Shipman. It's 10:28, 2019, 10:49 a.m. Cloudy, 61 degrees here in Brooklyn, New York. We're talking on the other side of the break about technology and how it is influenced. And so I was exchanging emails with these brothers that were talking about an incident that occurred in the fast food restaurant. I don't know where it occurred at, but the woman started throwing food at one of the employee. I don't know why she was doing that. And the employee threw something back at her and it knocked her to the ground. And so we got into a larger discussion about, employees, fast food employees being losers and this sort of thing. The guy said, "Oh man, that's awful. You shouldn't say that, blah, 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 blah." So my response was, and this is what we were talking about on the other platform, not this particular platform where they had posted the video, is that, first of all, these jobs no longer exist. The only reason that these jobs even partially exist is because of the social upheaval it would cause, you know, with the mass displacement of millions and millions and millions of persons that have little or no training, no skill sets, no competencies, no nothing. I mean, these people literally cannot do anything. They're uneducated or undereducated. And the jobs that, you know, were available, like when my father was working, who was not an educated person, you know, unskilled labor is what we call them. You know, you could live, you could raise a family. One person working. You know, my mother was a homemaker. So one person working could raise a family on the salary. I remember the salary made. I don't know how he made it. It would be like, I guess, $150 a week now. I don't know what that would equate to, you know, with the cost of inflation, you know, if you did it according to CIO. But even then, it seemed awful low to me, you know. And this is me as a child not knowing much about economics or salaries or salary scales or something like that. But I knew that was a very, very low salary. You know, $150 a week, and you're raising a family on that and having a house mortgage. And, you know, you only have one new car that I ever seen him buy, you know, a Chevy station wagon. And brought that right after the local school district declared our house, took our house by virtue of eminent domain, and I guess they gave him a, you know, a large settlement. And so they brought another house, had it built from the ground up in the same town. And we moved into that one, had a lot of property, you know, the whole nine. It was very nice. You know, we enjoyed it. A ranch. You know, it wasn't anything palatial. He brought a house. Not a house, I'm sorry. He brought a car, so I would assume that this was around the same time that he brought. And that was the only new, brand new car he had. You know, it was a station wagon at the time. They didn't have SUVs, you know. If you had a family and you wanted to transport them in relative comfort, that's what you did. You brought a station wagon. They had all sorts of station wagon, all kind of. They were really posh back then, you know. I mean, every manufacturer had them. And GM had some of them, you know, the more posh models, you know, slide down rear doors and, you know, power windows, power this, power that, you know, really nice, powerful, you know, spacious, really, really comfortable. Those vehicles are no longer around. I mean, I think that, you know, most of them might have went the way of the landfill, you know, when they started, I forgot what they called it. It was some program that the Clinton administration started with these old cars, and they started getting rid of them en masse. So you don't see a lot of these cars, especially from the 70s. You might see some from, you know, eras beyond that, which people felt were valuable, so they kept them. But those cars from the 60s and the 70s, you don't really see any longer. So at any rate, that's, you know, basically, you know, I kind of lost my train of thought, but I was talking about this here house that, you know, in terms of salary, getting back to salary. So, you know, we were talking about these people that, you know, they, you know, I watched a kid the other day. It had to be in his 20s, you know. But really, the disheveled, pushing a carriage with oversized T-shirt on, you know, hair was unkempt. And he was asking this white guy about a job. The white guy said, well, I don't know any jobs. I crab myself. And, you know, I was only there getting gas, so, you know, I couldn't help but overhear the conversation. I was just shaking my head because I had just seen the same kid, 20-something-year-old, in a library. And these are the people that are going to be disaffected the most by this upheaval, because I'm telling you, the only reason that you see anyone in the supermarket any longer, anyone in fast food any longer, is because people would not tolerate the degree of social displacement that mass unemployment will cause. But I would say 99.9% of all labor jobs that you see, retail, you know, fast food, that sort of thing, can be eliminated. You know, listen, let me tell you a story. And I'm sure some of the older persons might recall this. Back in well, I can't go back in the 50s, that's beyond my time, but I'm certain back in the 60s, and I'm saying the 50s because it was probably in the 60s, I mean in the 50s, if not further back. But it ended, I think, in either the 60s or the 70s, probably had to be early to mid 70s. They used to have a restaurant chain. I know they're still popular in Europe and Asia, but here in the United States, especially in New York, because I grew up in the city, not grew up in the city, grew up in out on Long Island, but you know, obviously, if you're that close to New York City, you're going to spend a lot of time in the city, and I did. So it was called Horn and Hardart's, though. Take that down and Google it. And what it was a place where you went in and it was just all vending. What we would call vending now. There was nobody in there. The food was already prepared. And all you did was select whatever you wanted, if it were a sandwich or a salad or apple or a beverage or chips or whatever. You just chose whatever you wanted, pudding, cake, pie. And you purchase it like anything you would get in an ordinary a restaurant service. And this was in the 60s, so you're talking 50 years ago. So, you know, think about it. I mean, if this type of technology existed 50, and when I was in Europe doing my little stint in the Legion. And just traveling after that, you know, throughout Europe before I returned to the United States, they had machines that vended beer, everything virtually you can get. And in Asia, it's the same thing. You can go and get sushi to a vending machine. I don't know that I would eat, you know, vended sushi, but you get. So the point I'm trying to make is that if they were able to do this 50 years ago, technology has advanced exponentially. This is why, and this is what I said in response to this brother. And you know, it wasn't said kindly, and I think that's what he took exception to. But the point is that Elon Musk and Bill Gates and these, you know, technology gurus have been telling us that we need to put the brakes on artificial intelligence because it's going to cause the sort of revolutionary change that we aren't prepared for. Because I'm telling you, 99.9% of all labor jobs, unskilled labor jobs, can be eliminated tomorrow. It is that's where we are right now. And I haven't even began to, you know, look at the skill portion of this, how many skill jobs can be eliminated by AI and robotics and things like that. So we're going to talk more about this over the coming weeks. And you stay tuned. Stay tuned right here every day at 10:30 for Marketing Pulpit International with my co-host. Thanks for listening and have a great day.